Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Okay, welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, August 12th, the long-awaited Weapons review, a movie I think we've been looking forward to for a long time, especially after Kreger's just kind of like knocked it out of the park, out of nowhere with Barbarian, and then all the hype going to this movie was crazy because they were like, hey, we're going to give him a big budget, and there's a big bidding war for the movie, and then Jordan Peele, like we talk about all, every time, he fired his team when they couldn't get the rights to the movie. So a lot of hype going into this and very excited to talk about it.
Yeah, that Jordan Peele story ended up being like the number one piece of marketing for this movie.
Couldn't
like,
be better.
Like I knew it was a story, but I didn't expect it to like break through to like my just mainstream like normal friends. Like my normal friends know about that. Like they know about that, which is like a crazy kind of inside Hollywood thing to breach to the surface, but... Yeah, no, it's, I think, benefited Weapons, especially their box office, which, holy shit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. It's crazy.
Holy shit, crushed projections. Mm. Crushed them. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this one.
Very excited to talk about that. We'll also be doing a combined ranking of horror movies over the last decade, so 2015 to 2025, or to the present day, I guess. And then as a special treat, sort of, just so you guys know ahead of time, after like the end of today, this is Monday, we'll be recording a watch-along of a movie which we've been dying to watch, but purposely haven't because we want to make a big experience out of it, Ice Cube's War of the Worlds.
It's been so hard not to watch this movie and waiting for this watch along, but I need to do the watch along. Yeah. I need to watch it with friends. Yes. I was like, you know, just eyeing it, coming home, you know, late nights and just seeing that. I'm like, 11 o'clock, this is the perfect time to throw this on, but I need my friends with me and I cannot wait. I've been seeing the GIFs on the timeline, Same. The videos, the clips, and it just looks like the biggest pile of shit I've ever seen. I cannot wait.
It held steady at a 0% for a long time, like at least a week. I think it bumped up to like one or two now, but very, very
Alvin
pumped.
Alvin brought this up when we were texting about setting up this watch along. Yeah. And he said a 0% in my eyes is almost as good as a 100%. Mm-hmm. He's right.
Like, it makes it must watch.
It's hard. It is hard to like hold a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Like it is really fucking hard because like if it's even slightly positive, they'll give you.
You need every single person to give it the equivalent of below a 70, right? So like yes. that is so hard. You find at least one, you know, yeah. Rotten Tomatoes critic like the Armand White, so we'll just go the opposite way, no matter what. So maybe he is the 1%. I have no idea.
No, it looks so bad. I can't believe that they were just. I don't know. We'll talk about it on the watch along because I have so many thoughts on like just even that movie being made.
3%. Jordan Hoffman from Entertainment Weekly said it's certainly stupid, but also a great deal of fun. He is the guy that brought this up out of the dredge. But anyway, yeah, we'll be doing that. That'll be in a separate video, but just look out for that tomorrow. Before all that stuff, let's talk about some news. We got the first trailer for The Paper, which is obviously a sort of, I don't know if you want to call it like a spinoff, but it is. Of The Office, Greg Daniels created in Toledo, Ohio. A documentary crew focuses its efforts on the Toledo Truth Teller, an historic but declining Midwestern newspaper trying to resurrect itself with volunteer reporters. Donald Gleason's the big ones. Sabrina Impacciatore, who was big in White Lotus Season 2, other, yeah. I guess, big star out of this. But yeah, the trailer looks like weirdly way different, I think, than The Office feel. I don't know how to explain it, but it doesn't look the same.
It does, but I feel like, and I was in like sixth grade, I think, when The Office premiered in the U.S. But I do remember I watched season one. I was one of the early adapters to it. But I feel like the marketing was very similar for the first season of The Office. Like, just trying to sell it as a workplace comedy, like, just kind of light and airy. But, yeah, no, it definitely does not feel like, you know, season two on The Office. That's for sure.
It doesn't look goofy. It looks more serious. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, no.
At least based on the trailer.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say that the original run of The Office was way more workplace comedy, like, generalized. This feels like it's really going to be tackling, like, new age media and online consumerism. And, like, it feels like it's going to be of the times, which I don't know if that works. I don't know if people want that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got no clue. I'm not. This isn't something I'm like, you know, going to be setting my timer to. You know what I mean? I'm not no alerts to go watch this at all. Although I do love Donald Gleason quite a bit.
I do love Donald Gleason. Yes, yeah. That is like the big plus here. I mean, like if it ends up being good, hell yeah! Like that would be fucking awesome to have this kind of workplace comedy back. But I don't know. The sitcoms have not been all that great lately.
No.
About as bad as like. Movies have been, comedy movies have been, I'd say.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Sitcoms have been in the same boat.
We had the first trailer for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. With her life crashing down around her, Linda attempts to navigate her child's mysterious illness, her absent husband and a missing person, and an increasingly hostile relationship with a therapist. Rose Byrne is the star. Conan is the therapist, which is... I didn't back-check it, but it like got to be the first time he's been in a movie in a hot minute. He's been in Kojima games more than he's been in movies.
What movies has he been in? I couldn't tell you. Unless he did like a voice in the B movie, that's like the only thing I can think of.
He did a voice in Futurama. That's a TV show. Yeah, I mean he has 27 credits on IMDb, and they're all like himself.
Conan Must Go.
Yeah, it's
great show by the way.
Let's see. Yeah, not really anything. It's just a lot of voices in TV shows, but that's basically it.
It's a very funny cast list.
Yeah, so Conan Bryan was the next one up. Then there was A$AP Rocky and Christian Slater. Just a weird crew. Very strange crew.
Woke.
Yeah. Very weird grouping of people. I like Rose Byrne a lot. I actually just rewatched Instant Family kind of recently. What a pleasant movie. Pleasant.
Great streamer.
That movie to me is like, I feel like Mark Wahlberg should watch that and be like, this is what I should do. Because he's like a pretty charming dad. Character when he wants to be.
Oh yeah.
And he just doesn't, he's like, no, I want to do the Union or like 15 action
Father
franchises.
Stu and Father Stu R-rated re-release.
How could we forget? But yeah, so If I Had Legs, it looks cool, like interesting. I like the crew. It's weird. Like it's weird enough where like if this was like a normal cast of like just kind of C-listers or whatever, I'd be like, whatever.
Yeah.
But like this is such a strange grouping of humans that I'm intrigued.
Yeah, no. And we'll talk about it with weapons, but anytime you get a trailer that really doesn't give much away, I'm just 10 times more interested.
Yeah.
Like, I have really no clue what this movie is about. The early reactions have been non-helpful, I should say. Like, no one's giving much away. They just say it's all over the place. So, yeah, no, I'm kind of excited for this. And A$AP Rocky, what the fuck? Just coming out of nowhere, just deciding to be, like, an art house actor now? Like,
yeah.
He's doing a Spike Lee movie and then a... Who's the director on this? It's
Bronstein.
Yes. I mean, what the hell?
It's a 93 on Rotten right now.
Oh, damn.
Through 20-something movies or 40-something?
I'll be honest, for a movie like that, that is, or at least what it seems like a very absurdist, abstract movie, that's kind of surprising that it would have that high of a score.
We also had the first trailer for Jay Kelly. Famous movie actor Jay Kelly and his devoted manager Ron embark on a whirlwind and unexpected profound journey throughout Europe. Along the way, both men are forced to confront choices that they've made, their relationship with their loved ones, and the legacies that they'll leave behind. Directed by Noah Baumbach, starring George Clooney and Adam Sandler as the main two, then also Laura Dern, if you couldn't already guess, is a Noah Baumbach joint, and Billy Crudup as well. Strange pairing, Sandler and Clooney. Like, I feel like, obviously, I feel like it more so Adam Sandler has delved into the Clooney world than Clooney has delved into the Sandler world, as far as, like, getting more into, like, serious pictures and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in this, for sure. I mean, Baumbach, I feel like, is a very talented screenwriter in relationships between two people specifically.
Very.
If that makes sense. I know it's kind of just everything he does, but he's very good at that. And I'm interested because this is like something so applicable to like inside Hollywood world stuff. But also I think you could apply it to anybody, like anyone who's starting to get old enough to be considered a washed up or whatever or has been. So I'm kind of want to see. I want to see what Adam Sandler's got here. So as well as Clooney, because I feel like I haven't seen him in anything good in a while.
Yeah, I mean, and Clooney and Sandler are like two of the guys in Hollywood that every time you get like a behind the scenes story, it's always just like, oh yeah, they're the fucking man. Like they I think they install like basketball hoops on all their sets. Like they're very cool guys. Like just to seem, or at least it seems like, to hang out with. And Baumbach is like just a good director. Like I find him a little annoying and grating at times, and his personal life is questionable. But his movies are good. Like, so I do think this will be good. Straight to Netflix, I don't love that. Don't love that at all. But he obviously has that deal. And Clooney. I need to see Clooney. Like, he needs one more great one. Yeah. I don't know if this will be it. But you look at the last like 10 years of his career, and he's been trying at points, but for the most part, it feels like he's George Clooney, the celebrity.
Yeah.
And George Clooney, the movie star,
is kind of a political advocate or whatever. Like, not so much the, what do you call it? The actual actor. Like, his last few movies are Wolves. Like,
Ticket to Paradise, I think.
Yeah.
Like, the last good one, but that's like very.
But then before that was Midnight Sky, which was dog shit Netflix slop.
Wolf's was terrible.
Wolf's was bad. If he also had a voice in.
Oh.
The Flash cameo. Oh.
I forgot he closed out the DCU as their Batman. I forgot about that.
Also, he's, I guess, directing. He did Boys in the Boat, which is solid.
Yeah.
Tender Bar, which I liked.
Yeah.
And then Midnight Sky, which is a pile of shit.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying. Like, where's his next Oceans? Where's his next Michael Clayton?
Yeah, for sure.
He's one of the great movie stars of my lifetime without, I think, like, the resume to really back it up. I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
He is way more of a...
Like, he's got a great career. Don't get me wrong. But he is top of the A-list celebrity-wise. And I don't know if he really has that kind of...
When you talk about, like there's a lot of arguments that go around the term household name. Like, he's a household name.
Oh, like
you know what I mean? There's so few people in the Hollywood world that are household names. So few. And, like, people are so dumb about the way they approach that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be like, Austin Butler is a household name. No, he's not.
He's not.
Timothy Chalamet is a household name. No, he's not. Like,
not yet, but he's the closest of the guys that are young.
Like, your fucking mom doesn't know who Timothy Chalamet is. You know what I mean? Like, everybody, regardless of age group, knows who George Clooney is. Gender, race, does not matter. Everyone knows George Clooney.
Yeah.
That is a household name. And he really just doesn't have... He's just doing so much in Espresso stuff and Casamigos and whatever.
It's true. He's just raking in bills. I mean, the guy is obscenely wealthy now.
Taking dumps in Richard Kind's cat box or whatever.
That too.
One of the funniest stories. But yeah, so that is Jay Kelly. Excited for that. Matt Smith is joining Starfighter. Also interesting. Supposedly as the villain, Starfighter so far, it's just Sean Levy, Ryan Gosling, me, Goth. They're the only two people confirmed other than him. I mean, yeah, he's got a villain face. He's got like that British aristocrat evil guy face. Perfect for like,
Eight-time Star Wars villain face.
Yeah, I think it's perfect for... And I'm assuming Starfighter is not going to be a Jedi thing. I don't know. We never really got a lot
of information. I honestly hope not.
I think he'd make a good Sith. I also think he'd be a much better like underground or Imperial bad guy, something like that.
He'd look good in an Imperial office.
In like the little hat?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, he'd look great in that. I think it's a great casting. Gosling already great. Goth is obviously, like, I think one of the top tier actresses, period. I mean, again, I'll always go back to just Goldberg. She gave some of the best acting performances of a year in like kind of like a cheap horror movie.
Yeah.
Like she's a beast. And Smith is obviously a fantastic actor. And Gosling. I mean, this great combo so far. Sean Levy's the only thing that people will find questionable, but I think there is a world where it's like if you're trying to make a Star Wars movie, you do kind of want to be a little popcorny in a way, and that is terrible.
Yeah. The cast is like clearly what they're gonna sell on here.
I
mean, these are some of the bigger names that they've cast since the prequel trilogy, right? I mean, the sequel trilogy
had no name as big as
no
Gosling.
Names. I mean, you think Driver, but Driver wasn't like not even close.
God, no.
I mean, Star Wars made Driver more or less. He was on Girls and like other stuff, but yeah, no. I mean, like this is a big fucking cast for Star Wars. Anything, even their series, they haven't really pulled in big name actors.
Like Pedro Pascal wasn't Pedro Pascal.
No.
Like nobody was. especially in the sequel trilogy, none of the outside of the legacy castings, like none of those people were stars like that.
Yeah.
Like, none of them. So like the biggest star would be Daniel Craig doing an uncredited cameo as a stormtrooper, which is, so this is a pretty huge cast. And it's also like, I feel like the Sean Levy world of entertainment cinema is so different from the Mia Goth and like,
it's very different.
Like, sort of world of cinema. So, like, that is, it's kind of a weird. Like
Ryan Gosling, Sean Levy kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Gosling has done a lot of popcorn stuff like that.
For sure.
But Mia Goth, so that's the most random one. And then very Matt Smith, obviously, too. Like, I don't know, a British person on set with Sean Levy just sounds crazy.
Two of them.
Just sounds, yeah, two of them. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
And then a couple more things. The One Piece Season 2 trailer teaser really hit the airwaves. It also already got renewed for Season 3. We got a first look at a couple of new characters, Nico Robin probably being the biggest, I would say, out of all of them. And then, like, Smoker, a few other ones. Just looks cool. I mean, again, this is a series where when initially dropped, and we had talked about it when they even announced, like, they were going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, no way this works. It's so fantastical. Like, how do you adapt live? Every time they adapt live-action anime, like, 99.9% of the time it sucks. And this is, like, such one where, like, it doesn't seem to apply to live-action.
Yeah.
Versus something like, you know, Cowboy Bebop, where you just do the Mandalorian reskin or whatever. But, like, this is... It was just good. It was a good first season television.
Yeah. It was really well-paced, I think, which helped it.
Yes.
And, they didn't shy away from, like, how corny and – or maybe corny is not the word. Campy, I guess, would be the word. They didn't shy away from the camp and, like, the absurdity of it all, which I think a lot of, like, those animated adaptations, they get to live action and they kind of take all the magic out of, like, what made you fall in love with the animated series, which One Piece didn't. It's still not as good as the animated series.
They never can be, right?
But the fact that it's, like, watchable, good, and people have – it has fans, I think, is just a win on its own, like huge win, considering the number of like live action adaptations of anime specifically that have just been fucking terrible,
really
terrible. So yeah, it was great. I caught up on like 10 episodes of the animated series over the weekend. And
honestly, I think I want to rewatch the live action too, probably before starting this. But I liked it. Also, who's the Dracula ass guy? I always forget his name.
Mihawk?
Yeah.
Dracula Mihawk.
Yeah.
His name is Dracula.
Yeah. He was good. Their live-action version of him was really good, too.
And, yeah.
I don't know. Looks good. Quick little teaser. New characters look cool. I'm interested. And lastly, Dave Bautista has been cast as the villain in Chad Stahelski's Highlander reboot alongside...
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, alongside Henry Cavill and Russell Crowe. I weirdly said, like, after they cast Bautista, I was like, if you're looking for somebody to replace the... have you ever watched Highlander?
No, I haven't.
So the main bad guy is this guy called the Kurgan, and he's played by Clancy Brown.
Okay.
And you realize his face, like his voice, like all that stuff. And he's like a really creepy, gross bad guy. Weirdly, the best replacement for him would have been Michael Shannon. And just turning this into an entire Man of Steel reboot with Henry Cavill and Russell Crowe as well. But, I mean, DiBattista is still a great actor. Interested to see how this plays out, because I like Highlander a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting lore movie that's been often imitated and very seldom kind of like done well. And it was kind of, I think it's Chris Lambert plays the main guy in it. And he's so bad. Like, terrible. They have like I think he's French Canadian or maybe just French. And he's playing a Scottish guy and he can't do either accent right. And it's just, he's really bad. But the whole movie is still so cool that I don't care. So excited to see what Stahelski has planned here, especially just because applying his fighting techniques to something like this. Versus in 1980s Highlander, where like they were just doing, bang, bang, while like the coolest Queen soundtrack, like made for that movie, played in the background. That wasn't.
Do they have an artist set up yet? Do they know who's going to do the soundtrack for this one?
I don't. What's the modern day Queen? The answer is nothing. But like, I don't know what band you get to kind of replicate that. They're going to get like fucking a singer. It's going to be like, The Weeknd or some shit.
Ugh, no. Stahelski has good taste, I think. Those John Wick soundtracks fucking rule.
They do rip, yeah.
I love when they like be in another country and then they'll just like let the like French version of Painted Black run.
Yeah.
Like I love that. I loved all those needle drops. But yeah, now Stahelski I think is just... Cast is great, obviously.
Yeah.
But Stahelski I think is the selling point. I mean, this is the first thing he's done outside of the John Wick universe director.
Hasn't really missed at anything, period?
What? No, I am very... And obviously we just watched...
Ballerina.
I didn't finish it, but the... Lazarus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was really cool.
involved in. Yeah, no, super talented guy. I want to see him do something outside the John Wick universe. I would love to get 8 more John Wick movies, but I also want Stalsky to show me what else he's got.
Yeah.
Because there's like a lot of stuff in John Wick that's like just straight pulled from like Westerns and I mean other you know, period pieces. So getting outside of like, you know, the modern age hitman society, what else can he do? I'm pretty pumped. Like, this is, he's one of the more exciting voices we have right now.
Yeah, especially in the action world. Okay, now we can talk about weapons. Weapons, when all but one child from the same class mysteriously vanish on the same night at exactly the same time, the community is left questioning who or what is behind their disappearance. Zach Kreger's second effort after Barbarian, which, again, we talked about, we liked a lot. Julia Garner, Josh Brolin, Alden Ehrenreich, Benedict Wong, Austin Abrams, Amy Madigan in the cast. So, like we said, a lot of hype going into this movie. And what's kind of made me nervous about it is, obviously, the hype, you could be disappointed really easily when you're that excited for something going into it. But in addition to that, the horror world, as far as early reactions go, it's been wrong.
Yeah.
Extremely wrong, you know, over the last, like 2-3 years. They'd be like, this Long Legs, oh my God, you're going to watch this. You're never going to be the same. Holy shit, it's the best movie of the year. And it's just okay.
Yeah.
Like, they've been very overzealous in their reaction of horror recently. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a little bit hesitant from both those things, because all the early praise was super high as well. Watch the movie. I loved it. I
mean, yeah.
It's just a damn good movie. I don't know if it's totally going to be what everyone expected out of it, if they might think it's more like a pure horror. It's going to be more, it's really like a horror comedy. Pretty flat out, I think. Like, more, maybe a dark, not even dark comedy, but it's horror comedy. It's funny as fuck.
It is very funny, but like,
it's scary as shit still, but like, it's funny.
Yes, it is very funny. I don't know if I'd put it in horror comedy, though. I don't know.
It's kind of like the rom-com argument we had, where it's like, this is more of like, I would say the horror is like an 80 to 20 split.
Yes.
Versus comedy, but like, it's still funny as shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this movie. It does so many cool things, like, throughout the different, like, each, because you're following different acts, like, you know what I mean, following different characters, yep, throughout their timelines and how they intersect. And each one, like, you get, like, a little bit of something different. Like I was saying before, it blends the genres really well, builds suspense really well, does, like, a lot of really cool and inventive stuff with camera work.
Yes.
Specifically, I think what he did was, he kind of, like, took a lot of techniques that were made horror classics great, especially in the camera work world, and kind of like blend them all into one. Like, you have like the Halloween POV shot going, yes, upstairs. You have like other stuff from like Friday the 13th, or from like fucking, like, everything. Like, you get it all in the one little spot. The camera work is great, and I also think just the acting across the board, A+.
Oh yeah,
you can't find a bad performance in this movie, which is rare. And also, when you think about the fact that this movie really had, they had a really late recasting after the strikes, yeah, and shit like that. Like, that also makes it even more impressive. Very, very impressed with the second effort. And I think the big thing I took away from it is that I am so excited to see what he does now with Resident Evil, which is a cool property. And he said he's making all original shit with that too. So very excited to see what Kreger's got cooked up for that.
Yeah, no, Kreger, I think, really established himself here and says that, you know, Barbarian wasn't a one-hit wonder. I mean, this is a big, and I really like Barbarian. I think this is a big step up. Do I enjoy it infinity times more than Barbarian? No, but like, as a movie, as a filmmaker, he's like on another level here. You brought up the camera work. I think the camera work is fantastic and like builds an atmosphere and puts you in a perspective with each chapter that like really has you on the edge of your seat throughout the movie. Just really impressive stuff. You brought up the cast. So good. One of the best ensembles, maybe the best ensemble of the year. Julia Garner was so good, and so was Josh Brolin. And then we'll talk about, I think, was she included in the trailers?
Madigan? I don't think so. Not that I had seen.
There is a late entry, which you don't expect, and she shows up, and she, I think, steals the show.
Eats it up.
So, yeah, fantastic. A lot to digest. I think, like, in the subtext, I've seen a lot of people interpreting it different ways. I don't think it's meant to be one set. I don't think there's supposed to be one set interpretation of it, which I really like.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
And what else I appreciate is that there's been a lot of horror movies the last 15 years, especially in like the post-hereditary world where everyone wants the metaphor to be the feature of the movie.
Yeah.
That is not the case here. There are interpretations which make it very enjoyable, but at the end of the day, this is a fucking horror movie.
Like an entertainment horror movie.
This is entertaining as fuck. Like, you don't need to read into it any further if you don't want to. You can just go to the theater and have your shit scared and laugh. Like you said, very funny. One of the best horror movies of the year. I kind of want to see it again. Let's talk some spoilers. This is kind of a tough movie to talk about.
Let's just get into spoilers. So if you haven't watched it yet, make sure to skip forward. There are a lot of scenes I think I wanted to point out from the movie. Just like, I just wrote down everything I could think of, like scene wise, where I'm like, mm-hmm. it'd be fun to talk about. I think everything with Austin Abrams was so funny. Like,
great.
He was, number one, a perfect junkie. Like, you couldn't look and act more like a junkie if you tried. Excellent stuff there.
He's the one guy that Kreger says that he kept from the original cast.
Yeah, the only
after
guy that stuck
Pascal
with it.
Dropped out and they had to rework everything. Mm-hmm. Abrams was the only guy he kept from that OG cast.
So every scene with him, I thought, was hysterical. Like, him pointing out Willow was so, like, what did he say?
Funny.
Willow, oh, hell yeah, or something like that. Like, it's really funny. I think when Alden Ehrenreich socks him for hitting the needle or whatever, like, that. I don't know how they filmed that and make that look different. It looked like he really punched him. Like,
oh, yeah.
It looked like he walloped him in the face. And then I think when he turned zombie or whatever, and, dude, Josh Brolin just G-tossing him, like, all over the fucking room.
That was so Looney Tunes, so like, that's the kind of like comedy where it's like, it works really well because you don't have to stop the movie and be like, oh, he's right behind me, or like drop like a one-liner or quip. It's just really fucking funny physical humor.
And he's making really funny noises too.
Yeah, that works. Like, it makes sense. Like, yeah, there's a zombie going after me. Like, it's not going to go down. Like, it's very fucking funny.
Yeah.
Watch Josh Brolin just continually have to beat this guy.
Like, he like punches in the face and goes, and then goes like right back up.
Kind of reminded me of the Austin Powers 2 bit where he's like, why won't you die?
Yeah, yeah. just stay down, please. And he's throwing him across this room. But everything with him, I thought Austin Abrams, he knocked it out of the park. The other things, the ending chase, I think you can't, we talked about it right after you got out. I mean, you can't really end a movie much better than that.
It'd be damn near impossible. it was a very good movie up until that point. And cemented itself as one of my favorites of the year with that ending.
Mm-hmm. The kids just fucking not all of them can. They clearly, the zombies can like use doors, like, you know what I mean. Like, they can. They're physically capable of it. But like, just slamming through the windows, like smashing through these houses is so fucking funny. And then her just like running away and just like screaming her head out, trying to go through every single house. Like, it
guy just mowing his lawn, just like, what the fuck?
There's an army of kids chasing this woman. So good. And then, like, when they catch her, just, like, brutally killing this woman.
Yes, I loved the sound design, like, the way they shot it, seeing, like, her head get split open.
Yeah.
They showed enough, but not too much of the actual gore. Like, that was great. That was such a great ending.
Yeah, it was bloody, but not too gory, which I liked. Also, you know what really killed me? Everything with like the Benedict Wong and his husband scene.
Yes.
So funny.
His husband coming into the living room with the
18 hot dogs.
That is 7 hot dogs, not 18. I got to say, this looks like something I'm going to do in the near future.
Dude,
7 hot dogs, and Benedict Wong's on the couch doing like a little crab hand motion. Like, he's like, give it to me.
Oh, dude, and they're wearing matching Mickey and Minnie Mouse fucking shirts.
And you think they're like queuing up like a game because, you know, hot dogs watch a baseball game or some sort of sporting event. Now they're watching some like bug documentary.
Dude, it was so funny. And then even like right after that, when like they turn him, Benedict Wong, zombie.
Yeah.
And he just like pukes. Like the motor oil shit all over him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And then like that is also a very funny scene, I think, too, when like they cut to him just running through the town, just like cut to like different sections of him like running with the fucking Naruto arms like through the town. That killed me.
Every single, which I have to ask, which chapter was your favorite? If you exclude the final chapter, which I think...
I really liked, I guess, the druggy chapter, I think was one of the funniest to me.
Yeah.
Because, like, that was... Everything with him was great, with, like, him trying to pawn off all the shit that he's stealing. Him, like, sitting there with the family, it's like, they're zombified or whatever, sitting there standing still.
Yes.
Oh, it fucking killed me.
Yes, when he turns around, that after the Willow DVD.
Yeah.
This is where, like, the comedy and horror balance so well.
Yeah.
Because it would have you on the edge of your seat, and then you'd laugh,
you.
And, like, disarm you, and then immediately snap back and be like, oh, you think that Willow DVD is funny? Well, there's fucking, like, dead parents sitting on the couch just staring at him. Horrifying. I'd also like to bring up the kid, which, do you have his name pulled?
It was Carrie something. He was really good.
I don't know what they're putting in these kids' drinks lately, but we've gotten a lot of great child performances the past few years.
Carrie Christopher.
Especially in the horror lane, and this kid is another entry into that. He was so good. Not an easy role to pull off.
Mm-hmm. Dude, he was very, very, like, all the kids, I think. Cause not everyone had a huge role to play or anything like that, but, like, that kid was excellent. Mm-hmm. He had a big fucking, he had a whole chapter, you know what I mean?
Like,
he had a lot to do, and I thought he did that really well. And then, like, Amy Madigan, man.
Yeah, I think she's the clear MVP of this movie, and that's crazy considering, like I said, I think Julia Garner gives an A-plus performance, Josh Brolin, too. This is just on that S tier. Like, it's one of the great horror performances we've had.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good. Try to think what else I put over
So here. Unsettling.
You know what scene really got me, too, like, scary-wise? When Julia Garner passes out drunk in front of their house.
Yes.
And she comes, like, the mom comes out of the house.
You hear it. And this is where the camera work was so good.
Because
you just stay on Julia Garner. Instead of panning over to see what is getting into her car, you just hear the car door open.
Yeah.
You hear the car door shut, and then it just cuts to the next scene.
You get the what do you call it, the scissors?
Yes, the scissors. That's what it was, the scissors. Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck was about to happen? She cuts the hair, gets out of the car, and then on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I could see the chapters not working for a lot of people. It's definitely different.
Yeah.
And I get that's where the Magnolia comp came in, which Kreger did an interview. Apparently that was like just something he throughout
because
the trades were like they ask like you know how do we describe this thing you're gonna do and I think he was just like Magnolia horror I could see that not working for people but for me I think it like elevated everything because like I said it would just build up and build up till towards the end of the chapter and then boom and then reset
you're right into the next zone
and then start building up again and then you're just getting different like points of view and everything starts coming together by the end. Yeah, no, really, really great.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, you know what was really good too? The POV sequences of them like walking through their house, like the bad house.
Yeah.
I thought were really fucking good. Like when they're going like up the stairs really slow, turning corners, but then like you cut back to like facing them, like dude, he was excellent.
Man, Kreger and stairs. Man, the
And old women.
And old women, yes.
Horrified of old ladies. My God. And I think I texted it to you as well when I got out of like Chapel Row and was about to eat so much shit for this because I don't think it was on purpose at all. But like,
oh no, it wasn't at all.
She looks that woman looks just like an aged up Chapel Row.
Yeah,
it's a tough scene.
Yeah, do you think this is a anti-trans text? Did you see the transphobic takes on the timeline?
Jesus Christ, no. They'll find it.
There was one really, really bad take. The guy was like, this is transphobic. And people were like, you just saw like an ugly old lady in a bad
assumed
wig and
it was...
assumed this is a trans allegory. This probably not the take you want to put out there. What else? The dreams, the two dream sequences were so good.
Yeah, very.
The first one where you think she's woken back up. It's that old trick.
Yeah.
You think they woke up from the dream, but not really. And you see the... what was her name? Gladys on the ceiling, who you hadn't met yet. So you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then the other one, which I think I liked even more, was the Josh Brolin.
A lot of people ask questions about the gun thing.
I think that it's not meant to have a meaning. I don't think it's supposed to have a concrete meaning.
Yeah. So the one thing I could find about it, because I looked it up too, because I was like, I want to know more.
In the theater, I was like, is this a school shooting allegory? Like, is that what they're trying to get at here?
So... there was a bill in 2022 that would have banned assault rifles. It passed the House with 217 votes.
And okay.
Something happens at 217, but it didn't pass in the Senate. And I think maybe that if you want to try and like find something there, maybe it's that and like trying to, you know, the whole thing with Josh Brolin's character is he's like, this is an inexplicable thing. How can all these children just disappear? Like that's like something that should never happen. It's unexplainable in the real society. Like
yes.
So you could make a reach there, I guess, and try and put that together there.
I don't think it's a bad read at all. Like, I don't think, I think there's a lot of reads that make sense on this movie, which, back to my original, like, opening statement was, like, the fact that you can have so many reads on it and there isn't a concrete one, I think, is a feature of the movie, not, like, a bug to it.
Yeah. And the movie did great, like we were saying before, $70 million worldwide this weekend, $38 million budget, which is crazy. When it made Warner Brothers officially the first studio in history to score six consecutive $40 million openings, which is crazy.
I don't know, man. Zaslav back against the wall, rent check due.
But then at the same time, like disassembling Warner Brothers Discovery again.
Trying to shut down TCM.
Yeah, still trying to shut down TCM. And like it's
got Ben Mankiewicz shilling for AI.
I feel like he's like he's a failing upwards type guy. Oh, he's regular failing upwards.
This does feel like failing upwards.
Yeah.
It's probably more, what's his face, DeLuca and the other person running their film division, which they deserve their flowers. But yeah, no, nice little run for Warner Brothers.
The only big question, I guess, because we kind of talked about the other stuff I wanted to ask.
There was a question someone left on my letterbox too, which I did say I would address on the pod.
The one thing I would ask, though, for you, I guess, is do you think this movie would have been better with the original cast, which was Pedro Pascal in the Josh Brolin role, Renate Rensver, or Rensvate?
Yeah.
Worst
Person in the World.
Yeah. As she was going to play Julia Gardner, Brian Tyree Henry was going to play Benedict Wong, and then I think Tom Burke was going to play the dad, I think.
Feels like a much different movie.
I would agree.
It feels like, and he has said that he had to change, not only just when he recast, he had to change the script too.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how drastic those changes were, but it does feel like Pedro Pascal as the hardened father, like the kind of, you know, tough dad.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe it's because he's played such a softy so many times as a father, like a real, you know, gooey cinder kind of guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I could see him there. I bet it would have been a daughter instead of a son, honestly.
That would work.
I don't know. Renate in the Julia Gardner spot. I don't know.
I think Julia Gardner was like the perfect substitute teacher lady. You know what I mean? Like she has teacher
face.
Yeah, she was
like, that's exactly what I was about to say. She has like very much fourth grade teacher energy.
Yeah. I had a math teacher that looked exactly like her and it just really seared in my brain.
Yeah, no. This is the right cast.
Yeah,
things turned out the way they were supposed to, and you know Abrams got to stick around, so we all won in the end.
Shout out to Aaron Reich, man, crushed it.
Man, the old Renaissance that was the funniest. I think chapter.
His chapter
was like it's just perfect. Oh, Alden,
my life
like
is fucked.
Yeah, that's like the classic Alden Aaron Reich performance where he's just like a down on his luck guy. Mm-hmm. He kind of did that in Cocaine Bear too.
Yeah,
and the like his relationship with his. His fiance and his future father, father-in-law being his boss. And
the stare he gives him.
Yeah, the stare was so funny. And his like shit with needles, like he just keeps getting fucking poked.
What do you call it? What does he say to him in the car? He's like, you don't have AIDS, do you?
Yeah,
like,
he keeps asking, do you have AIDS?
Yeah. Like, I don't think so. I wasn't tested. But yeah, so that was a big question. What was the one that you...
Someone asked, like, so the cinema score for Weapons is an A-, a lot higher than Barbarian at a C+, and it was like, what do you think is the difference there? What do you think made this work for people that didn't work for Barbarian?
I'm trying to think, like, what would be...
I think cinema score, to be honest, is a very flawed metric, because it's all based on expectations. They don't ask you... Their question... Cinema score is an exit poll, leaving the theaters, and I think what they ask is... Did this movie meet your expectations?
Okay.
So I think it comes in... What comes into play is, like, do you know what to expect?
Mm-hmm.
With Barbarian, it was sold as, like, an Airbnb horror.
Yeah, with, like, Bill Skarsgård as the villain, basically.
With Bill Skarsgård as the villain, there's a major rug pull, which I loved. But I think that's where the cinema score gets fucked, is shit like that.
Yeah.
So kind of a flawed metric. But I do think this... This working more for people than Barbarian, it's just a better movie. It really is just a better movie.
Tighter, better acting.
Yeah, better camera work. I think just better across the board. Also, one more thing I want to shout out before we move on, which I learned from another interview Kreger did. He did the music for this.
He made it?
He composed the score with his two friends.
Oh, that's cool.
Who he also, I think, went to college with and he's known forever.
Ryan and Hayes Holiday. With. That's cool.
Very cool. There's a very small group of directors that have done that. It's like John Carpenter.
Yeah, Carpenter's the big one.
Clint Eastwood. And that's the two that I can think of off the top of my head.
The opening was that George Harrison song, which is very good.
Yes.
Like they show all the kids running out of their houses.
Mm-hmm. I also, man, the opening was great too.
Yeah.
Very creepy. The little girl, this is a true story.
Yeah.
Like, so scary. Little kids are just terrifying.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, that's Weapons. We liked it a lot. I feel like it met expectations, like you were just saying, which is very tough considering how high they were, mm-hmm. with all the people that were involved, with how good Cracker's last movie was. It kind of reminds me of probably, I guess, to how people would react to Midsommar after Hereditary. Is that a good comp? Because people loved Hereditary, and they're like, well, what's he going to do next? And then Midsommar was fucking awesome.
Midsommar was huge. But it is very similar. I would say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, really enjoyed that. So now we're going to do a combined ranking of horror movies since 2015.
Let's do it.
So there's a lot to choose from. There's like, I'm just looking at the list right now. We made like a tentative list. I didn't obviously include everything in it that like every horror movie period, but like it's included the ones that I think are probably worthy mm-hmm. being up there. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
Get a wheel going, man. Let the universe decide.
What, flip a coin or something? Let's see. I'll take Tails. Flip a coin.
Never fails. Tails, you go first.
Tails, I go first.
Okay.
It is Tails.
Okay.
Fuck. Okay,
number
so
10 pick.
Number 10 pick. This is hard because there's a lot of good ones. And this is good space, though, number 10, because you can pick something. You know what I'll pick? I'll do Talk to Me. How about that?
Hell yeah.
Talk to Me, I think, is a good-ass horror movie. One of my favorites, one of the more new, interesting ones. And we had talked about it with those two. Was it Raka? The guys that made Talk to Me.
Oh, the Filippo brothers.
Yeah, Filippo. Their YouTube channel is Raka something, right? Am I crazy?
Yeah,
it's something like that, yeah.
Yeah, their YouTube channel does have a different name.
Yeah, but they were incredible. I thought that movie was awesome. All the actors in it were interesting. It was a cool idea, unique, fresh, very interesting, creepy. Really, really, really liked Talk to Me. And I think that's worthy of like a 10 spot, right?
Yeah. It would be on the edge for me.
Yeah.
But it's... At 10, I don't have an issue with that at all. And I think it's something that could age really well. You know, directorial debut for, I think, two of the more exciting young filmmakers we have right now.
Yeah.
Which, their follow-up didn't work for me as well, but still well-made.
Yes, agreed. God, the fucking teeth on that
don't make me think table. About that. God damn it. Okay. Man, there's a lot of good movies here. You're right. Whew. Number 9, I think this is the only, this is definitely the only Oscar-nominated one on here. So I think we'd be remiss to not include it, and I think this is a good spot for it, The Substance. Might be recency bias, but I do think it's one of the better body horrors we've had, and I'm not a big body horror guy, but it's a better body horror for me, I would say, because I think narratively it's interesting, really interesting, and then Demi Moore is just fantastic. Demi Moore is so good. Margaret Qualley is so good.
Quaid. Crushed.
Chewing in that fisheye lens.
Yeah.
Making disgusting noises. Great sound design. Just sloshing and just grimy noises throughout. And it looks great.
Very
soundtrack is awesome.
Very solid movie that I think got diluted by the fact that like the people that watch one movie a year mm-hmm. watched it and said this is the best movie in history.
Yeah.
So, like, that kind of diluted my – it shouldn't at all, by the way. That's wrong. But it diluted my opinion a little bit. But, in all objectiveness, it's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's one of those movies that 20 years from now, you'll ask, like, younger horror filmmakers, like, what is one of the bigger inspirations that you had growing up? This will be one of those movies that will be commonly thrown out.
All right. After The Substance – this is tough because there's a lot of really – like, I'm trying to stick to, like, the sort of spirit of it, right? Where, like, there's certain movies which I would consider more of, like, a horror comedy or more of, like, a action horror or more of, like, fuck, it's hard. Like, for example, one I would love to put maybe even higher is, like, Train to Busan. But, like, that's such, like, an action horror movie. It's not, like, a scary horror movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a zombie movie, that's for sure.
It's arguably the best zombie movie ever. And it's
I think that's fair. I think Train to Busan, it's in my top 10 on my list.
It's not, like, it's not, like, a horror. I think then probably I'm gonna do something else instead. I think then what are the other ones I have on my list here? Sinners, another great example. Not very scary.
Not very scary, but for sure a horror.
It's 100% a horror movie, but I feel like it's just
a classic monster movie.
It is. It's so not like in the spirit of what I think of when I think of a horror movie, if that makes sense. Because it's like a fantastic story. It is a great action movie. It is a great drama. It is like all those things. But at no point when I'm watching that movie, I'm like, wow, that's scary.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just not a scary. And I feel like it needs to be like more purely scary to be a horror movie. And like, that's unfair probably, but it will affect a lot of these, for me anyway. I think I'll do like maybe like A Quiet Place. Fuck, this is hard.
See, A Quiet Place, I think, is just as dramatic and non-scary as Sinners.
I think I'm way more scared by anything. I don't think I was scared at any point during Sinners. I was definitely scared at points during Quiet Place.
But I think there's a crowd that's definitely scared at Sinners.
I'll throw one in here, and you can feel free to veto it if you want, because it's one of my favorite movies, Korean movie, The Wailing. I fucking love that.
I haven't seen it, but I know that's like top.
It's horrifying.
Well regarded, and something I probably should see at some point.
It is horrifying. It is such a scary movie, and you could feel free to rip it if you want. You're take it away.
No. So many people I trust have said this is a great movie, so I have no issue with this being here. Okay. And I can't veto something I don't know about.
Okay. So then you get number seven.
Number seven. Whew, okay. Man. The top five are easy for me, but then once we get past there, there's about 15 movies that I think are very interchangeable, and it's just where you want to go. Ooh. You know what? Number seven? Nah, I won't do that. This is tough.
It's very hard.
I'm going to put this here. No, I'm not going to do that. Shit.
It's hard.
This is hard. Fuck it. Weapons. Let's put Weapons there.
I don't think that's wrong.
Which, this might be recency bias, or maybe six months from now, you know, after we've seen it multiple times, this could be too low. Yeah, no. I think everything we just talked about, I think this is just a very exciting movie and a very fun movie to think about and talk about. And like I said, not only think about, just watch. Like, it's scary as shit and very entertaining.
Yeah, and like kind of the same things I was talking about with Sinners were like oh, well, it's not that. There's absolutely very scary parts of this movie, like horrifyingly scary, like, oh, like, yes. Like full on jump scare scary parts of this one. So I think that's fair, throwing that in at seven. But, oh, man, this is so hard after here, man. This is so tough. Like, I think Midsommar can go here.
Yeah.
I think Midsommar was horrifying. A lot of the kind of, we've talked about it a lot whenever we mention Midsommar, but like the daylight horror thing is just such a cool concept. It's constantly building up your suspense and like what's going to happen. Not as many jump scare moments, I would say, but like a lot of like dread throughout that movie. Like, what is going to happen? I'm so afraid, blah, 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 blah. And then like the whole ending 20-ish minutes are just like, what the fuck is happening right now? And man, Pew crushes our boy. Will Poulter crushes.
I mean,
the whole crew is great.
Cheedy, what's his name? William Jackson really Harper.
Yeah.
Very good. Jack Rayner.
Jack Rayner was the guy, right?
Yeah, the boyfriend. The
boyfriend.
The bear.
Yeah, the guy in the bear suit.
Yeah, no, I would have honestly gone higher with it, but this is right in the zone, so yeah. No veto for me. Pew, I think, this is probably her best performance of her career still. Just so good, and like visually, just amazing. Like, really does. There's a lot of movies out there where people will be like, oh, it's like an acid trip. It's like doing LSD. This really does. Like,
big time.
He does some sort of like voodoo with the like outer edges of the frame in every single shot where it's like twisting and twirling.
Yeah.
Ah, man. What a picture.
So Midsommar, now you have number five.
Number five. I want it on here, and I don't want it to not be on here. So I'm going to go Nope.
You're going to Nope this early? Oh, wait, never mind. I'm thinking a different movie. But, duh.
You're thinking of the other
movie. My brain broke.
But I want this in there.
No, that's
Nope.
Good.
Which is, once you accept that it's sci-fi Jaws, it kind of opens up for you. My first viewing, I really liked it. And then second viewing, I fucking loved it. Visually, I still cannot believe that did not get nominated for Best Cinematography. Just gorgeous looking movie. Another movie where the sound design is incredible. And a movie that is legitimately fucking horrifying, like really scary. Not throughout, but it has like just, I would say, three or four moments that are as scary as anything else that I've ever seen. I mean, the monkey, so scary.
Horrifying.
The scariest one, the scariest part is like when they get sucked up. Like yeah. that visually just in the sound and oh.
Such a very unique look at like a alien. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You're never going to see something like that. I feel like within like a 10-year gap of movies, usually everything pretty much looks the same. Speaking of, we're going to see that in War of the Worlds presumably soon. So Nope off the board. I feel like we need to have Hereditary on here.
We do.
So I'll get it out of the way and I'll throw it on here. I actually like Midsommar better than Hereditary, feel like can we retroactively swap them? I feel like that's fine. We can change our mind.
We can both use our vetoes here.
Yeah, we'll double. Okay,
we double veto and we're gonna flip
Hereditary Midsommar. Wow. Midsommar to 4, Hereditary to 6. That was wrong. I mean Hereditary's.
I do think the consensus is I think Hereditary over Midsommar.
Yeah, I would disagree.
But I do disagree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very scary, and I think the performance of Tony Collette is better than anything in Midsommar, no offense, mm-hmm. Florence Pugh.
Another, like, wow, how did the Academy not?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
She was excellent. Gabriel Byrne was great. Like, it was a wolf, one of the
wolves. I mean, yeah, one of the wolves awesome. Is good.
Yeah, I mean, they're all good. I mean, everything's good. That looks great, interesting, different. The dollhouse sequence is cool as fuck. The whole ending was just horrifying. But yeah, I mean, Hereditary should be on this list.
I mean, I think it is probably the most influential on this list. I mean, when it came out, it really changed everything. It changed everything for that genre. It changed. I mean, it's the one that really put A24 on the map. It's weirdly like one of the most important movies of the 21st century.
So now you have number three.
Number three. Let's get some Eggers on the list, baby. Let's get some Eggers on there. Give me the Lighthouse. Robert Pattinson. This is another one where, is it horror? It's psychological. For sure, but is it a psychological thriller, drama? I think it is horror.
Horror fantasy?
Yeah, sure.
Sounds right.
Just one of those movies that it's on the opposite end of like really accessible, like easy to understand. It's just two guys losing their fucking minds with a lot of like symbolism and imagery that I don't fully understand, but it looks cool. And I'm enjoying these performances, and I'm scared throughout. So the Lighthouse is on the list. I think visually it's like the best-looking one on here. It's so good to look at.
Three is so high.
Three is so high, but fuck it.
This is not a very – I wouldn't say a very scary movie. Definitely like an anxiety builder more than anything else. But
yes. I think more like a creeping dread.
Yeah. So now number two. You know what? I feel like we're on the same page for number one. It's just what is number two?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what you go with here.
I have
a pick, but I know you don't think it's a horror.
You think it should be Sinners?
I do think it should be Sinners.
And here's the thing: like, I don't disagree. It's just like how it'd be the best
vampire movie.
Yeah, no, 100%. It is a horror movie. There is indisputable. But like,
we're not doing the top 10 scariest movies.
No, but like my experience with Sinners is so different than my experience with something like The Lighthouse or Weapons or actually probably some more similar to Weapons than anything, or like The Wailing or like Talk to Me. Like it's such a different type of movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's so hard to explain. Like they're running parallel to each other. But like here's what I'll say. Okay, I'll do Sinners. I'll just throw it up there because it's the best. Out of like it'd be probably the best movie out of all these that we've listed so far. I feel like actually definitely the best movie, period. But it's just like when I think of horror, it's just not something that will ever, I think, come to mind. We're like, hey, what's the scariest or what's the best horror movie you've seen recently? I don't know if I'd immediately think Sinners as being the best horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what's the best movie you saw in the last year? I might say Sinners. But just, I don't know how to explain it. It might just be my broken brain thing, but like it's weird. But I'm fine with it there.
It's a horror movie, for sure.
It is. It's just there's different.
The first question people would ask me when it came out was, how scary is it? Like, people. It was sold as a horror movie.
It's definitely sold as a horror movie, but it's just not scary.
I'd say there's scary parts. The opening jump scare, very fucking scary.
Yeah.
The dad.
Yeah.
The preacher dad. And then, yeah, one, I think, is like, honestly, very easy. It's a very easy call. Get out.
Like, yeah.
I think it is. There's a lot of really fucking good movies on the list, and it's crazy that it's just that clear cut, I think. The Get Out.
I never even considered a different movie over the last 10 years.
It's just one of those things that just kind of like a magical thing happened with Jordan Peele, and he got, I mean, not only just a perfect script, he also just got a perfect cast. I mean, like, Lakeith Stanfield's like the fourth build here.
Yeah.
Daniel Kaluuya is your lead actor before he's like
gone off
an Academy Award winning cult member.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where it just came out and Jordan Peele immediately became one of the biggest directors on planet Earth. And for good reason. It's because of this movie.
It's awesome, innovative, unique, like very, like who thinks of that shit? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's a fucking weird concept, the brain swap. Like it's insane. And then applying like different shit onto it, obviously like the racial subtext of it. Like it's just crazy.
Yeah, that's another situation where if you want to read into it, you can get a lot of enjoyment going down the rabbit holes of like everything, all the meaning behind it and all the, you know, metaphors in there. But it also just, it's a scary fucking movie. It's a very scary, very entertaining and tight movie. It moves quick.
So that is, our list is then Get Out, Sinners, The Lighthouse, Midsommar, Nope, Hereditary, Weapons, The Wailing, The Substance, and Talk to Me.
I think people don't have opinions on horror movies. Yeah. Very strong opinions.
Some of the ones off the board, Train to Busan, which you talked about, Us, also probably, Us probably could have.
Yeah.
Us is really good.
But, like, are we going to put three? I mean, probably should. But.
One I really agonized on over, actually, which I just couldn't find the right spot for, is Annihilation. I fucking love Annihilation.
I know.
So scary. So fucking weird. But also, again, you kind of apply to that same horror logistics to it. Like, how scary is it? I mean, the bear scene is...
Oh, yes.
Unbelievable. And then the alien scene.
It's pretty scary.
X... Also on there, we talk about Mia Goth and Pearl. Like, Pearl is so much more a anxiety builder than a, like, a, you know, scary movie. Bone Tomahawk is one of those, like, fucking destroys your brain for the next year movie you'll ever see. And Miss S. Craig Zahler, make more movies, please. The Invitation also could be on there.
Yeah.
Mandy is a psychological fuck-up. That'll ruin your day.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
His House was cool. That was one of the better Netflix original movies.
I remember that one.
So when we're like these like Nigerian immigrants are in that house in like I think in England.
I don't remember at all.
Oh, it was pretty good. Barbarian, which you talked about. Mm-hmm. Possessor probably should have made it on here too. Possessor is awesome. Really, really good movie as far as like recent horror. A Quiet Place we talked about a bit. It's more of like an.
It's a tough one. I've gone back to them. They're all just.
They're okay.
They're all like they're a little better. The thing is, they're a little better than okay.
But they're not like, what people.
They're like 7.5 to 8 out of 10s. Like they're all in about in that range, 7 to 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
But like they don't really elevate past that point for me.
Green Room also very good. I don't know if you've seen that one, Patrick Stewart.
Oh yeah,
very good. Crawl, which I liked, but also more action than horror.
Yeah.
Don't Breathe was cool. Long Legs we talked about. Nosferatu also could be up there too, but like it's kind of like a weirder gray area.
See, I'd say that is less of a horror than even
Sinners. I would agree. 28 years later, same kind of thing where it's like the action element of it is just so different than what it is. You know, in the sort of like the whole Ralph Fiennes like rumination on grief is one of the coolest fucking like so, how is that in a horror movie sequel? It's crazy. Bring Her Back, also we talked about. It is kind of funny just thinking about Long Legs again because I texted this to you after Weapons. Like Kreger is who people think Osgood Perkins is. Like, they're like, look at Osgood Perkins. He's making these goofy, campy horror. Oh, my God. He's so cool.
And it like, is really funny. I got, like, out an hour into Weapons. I was like, you know, this really feels like a Stephen King movie, like a Stephen King adaptation, which and then I was like, oh, man, Osgood Perkins really, really, he did a Shining, or not a Shining, a King interpretation. Nowhere near as good as this one.
Ass. And it was, that was one of the worst, again, I know you dug it a little bit more than me, but, like, that was one of the worst.
Yeah, no, I had fun with it, but, like, it's not like, you know, Weapons, I'm going to go and tell my friends to go see it. The Monkey, yeah. I was like, if friends asked if it was good, I'd be like, yeah, go see it. It's pretty fun. This one, it's like, I'm going to get out and be like, no, you need to go see this.
Yeah, that was Monkey and Long Legs not touching this
one. He's got another one coming out this year.
Yeah, just keep giving him movies to make.
Yeah, we'll give him respect in that. He's putting out, he's working.
He's definitely working. No one's doubting that. But yeah, so that is our list. I believe next week we have Highest and Lowest, which should be fun. So, highest to lowest from our good old boy Spike Jones.
Holy shit.
No, not from Spike Jones. Spike Lee, starring Denzel Washington, Jeffrey Wright, A$AP Rocky, and Ice Spice. Should be an interesting one. Been getting every time I see a new trailer for it, I get more and more pumped up for it. I feel like it's been a hot minute since we saw a Spike Lee movie. What was his last one?
Was it Black Klansman?
No.
No, The Five Bloods?
I don't think so either.
Spike Lee's most recent movie.
The Five Bloods. It is 2020. Damn. Shit, man. That's crazy.
That was a really good movie.
I really enjoyed that, too. Dude, the fucking Delroy Lindo. Holy shit, man. He crushed that movie. He was so
good.
That
monologue was so good.
Yeah. But yeah, excited to watch that. And then I think we have some other things during that same period.
Scott Stealing's coming up. The Aronofsky Butler movie.
We have Nobody 2. We have Americana. Mm-hmm. We have Night Always Comes with Vanessa Kirby.
These are all movies I'm excited for. Eden, excited for that one.
East of Wall. I don't know what that one is. Under Fire, The Witchboard. And yeah, but I think it will be Highs to Lows is the one we'll be working. So make sure to watch that, and we'll get
if
back
you can.
To you. Yeah, if you can. If you can find it.
We might have to actually audible that one now that I think about it.
Is it not in the theaters?
I don't know if it's going outside of New York and LA.
If it wasn't going to be that, then it would probably be Nobody 2, I would imagine, which isn't the worst.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I just don't know how. What are we going to say about Nobody 2, even if it's good?
I don't know. I like Nobody 1.
I did like Nobody 1, but
I don't know. We'll see how it works out.
Bobby O.
Yeah. But we will see you guys then next week.